Today is Saturday, May 6, 2017, and we are here in Storvik's apartment, and I am Ruth Storvik, and I'm here with June Sechrist, and thank her for coming today and sharing her story with us in order to be a part of the Raven Landing Resident Stories Project. We'll start first with a little biographical information, telling us where and when you were born and where you grew up, and any stories you'd like to share with us about parents or ancestors?
Well, I was born in Chico, California, May 2nd, 1931, in my mother's home with her parents, where she grew up, and apparently in the bed where she slept, I don't know. But I saw it. I've been in that house a couple of times. And I don't know where my younger sister, who's 3 years younger than I am, was born, but was someplace else in California. And she was a little one when my parents moved to Portland, Oregon, where my father had a sister who, and I don't know why, I don't know where they met or anything about them at all. But I know that this sister, which is older than he, had been working in California, and she probably brought him down there. I don't know. And the first place we lived, I don't even remember it. Of course, I had to have been a little better than 3 years old because my sister was born in March of 1934. So what I remember is a house on a cut in North Portland. And I remember my grandpa, this was in the neighborhood where my father's family lived, his mother and dad. And we had a house that had a wide porch across the front that was concrete. And grandpa used to come and sit on that porch. He just lived down the way a bit. And I'll never forget, he was a tobacco chewer, and I'll never forget he would spit out on the lawn. And one day after he left, I went out to see if I could find what it was, but I never did. He also made baskets with wooden bottoms that had holes poked in them, and he'd take me out to collect willow branches to make baskets. Those are the things I remember about Portland. But we moved all around Portland, North Portland, Southeast, which is where I really grew up, was Southeast Portland, which was east of the hoity-toity community. And I'm trying to think of the name of the college there that most people know about. It had a swimming pool in the backyard of the university in the back. We used to walk over there and go swimming, and I'm trying to think of the name of it. And when war was over in Europe, I believe, I was in the swimming pool, and there were a few other people, and somebody came down and said, "It's over." This is probably Europe, because I think it was a spring one. Anyway, I'm kind of jumping around here. By the time I got to high school, I'd been to 10 different schools. It was all in Oregon, but they still had different things going on. And to this day, my handwriting I consider a handicap, because even I can't read it. And I didn't finish high school. I was too busy running around with my friend, riding bicycles, which we rented from her younger sister, because I didn't have one. It cost us a quarter a week, I think. But my friend had to pay it. I couldn't. All over Southeast Portland, Reed College, just remembered. And she had an aunt who was her mother's sister, lived quite a ways out of town in a beautiful area, and they had horses, and we would ride our bikes out to their place, which was a small farm with a very, very old farmhouse, probably three stories, but I don't remember that. And they had a creek that you had to cross and the willow trees. Oh, it was really nice. And we would ride horses all over that area and then come back home on our bicycles. And that was kind of, you know, and we went to livestock expositions, went to horse races. You know, I was busy. I didn't want to go to school. I never had any aspirations because the only thing available to a female was to be a teacher or a nurse or a secretary. And I didn't want to be any of them except maybe the nurse, but my parents had no money and I knew there was no hope for that. So here I am. I quit high school, I think, after the third year. And a gal that lived real close to us, about a block and a half away, hated to see me sitting around doing nothing and wanted me to go apply for a job at Emmanuel Hospital, which was a nursing school. There was a great big dormitory across from the hospital and a very large separate building for maternity there. And they hired me. And I went to work in the kitchen. I'd never seen a dishwasher before. And I didn't last in there very long. They took me down into the cafeteria to make salads and not make them, but serve them and do that sort of thing. And then I got tapped on the shoulder to learn how to do bedside care. And I did that, and I worked at that hospital until I got married. And the man I married, his mother worked there. And she was a good neighbor of another dear friend of mine. And that's how I found him. And he was in the Air Force at Ladd Field. And I think he was there, I don't know whether he ended in 53 or started in 53. I don't know, but he got out of the Air Force, went back to Portland, and joined up with the Air National Guard. He'd been a radar observer here on the F-89s, but he wanted to learn to fly, and that was a lifelong thing that he was going to do no matter what. So I met him, and it took sort of, I don't mean sort of, but it did. It didn't take very long. And so then he wanted me to marry him, and I said, okay. He said, well, then he told me what his plans were. It was to go to Big Spring, Texas at Webb Air Force Base and go into flight training. And so what he did, was plan a wedding, and I flew down there, first time I'd even been inside of an airplane, to Texas, and he had it all done, and that's what we did. So then we sweated out the school, which was, I don't know anything about it, he never talked about it, but it was, of course, it was tough. And when he was finished with that, he had saved up enough money to purchase an airplane so we could fly home, which we did, and we hunted all over Texas. This is sort of central Texas. We were by close to Longview, and we had honeymooned in Midland and that area. And so we found a little, it was an air coop, 99001 was the number, and it was a two-seated, low wing with fabric covers on the wings and aluminum body, cute little thing, side by side. And so we flew to Portland. And on the way, one of my fondest memories is landing in Albuquerque among a whole bunch of big stuff. And we're just sitting in there in the airplane, didn't know what to do. Pretty soon, a humongous big thing came by and says, "Oh, there you are." They couldn't see us. And so pretty soon we did what we needed to do there and took off. Stopped in Las Vegas. And, you know, during this time, we had a sleeping bag with us, and we slept under the... No, we didn't go to Las Vegas. We went to Reno, and we slept under the wing of the airplane at that time. But I think we did stop in Las Vegas shortly, but we didn't stay there. And got home. I don't remember how many days it took us to get home. So he enrolled in Portland State University. He'd done some college work in California prior to being in Portland. And I went, got my job back, went back to work at Emmanuel. And while he was taking classes, he had a classmate who had a wife who was a nurse whose dear friend was going to get married in Anchorage. And she wanted to go to the wedding. So these two guys colluded, and we flew. But before that, we sold the air coupe and bought a CB down on the southern Oregon coast somewhere and flew it up. And it was 87576, I remember that too. And it was really humongous compared to what we had. And he'd gotten all arranged at how he was going to fly up on the inside passage area. And somehow got in a conversation with somebody, said, "You're going to fly over land? You've got an amphibian?" No. So guess what? We flew up the coast. And it was just an absolutely wonderful journey. We left Portland on Labor Day, 1958, we had been married in 1957, and flew up, and I think it took us 10 days. We had weather and unfamiliarity, and people took us into their homes. I to this day, I just marvel at the kindness of people. We had a puppy with us, too, and she was... I don't know how old she was, but I remember we stayed in the home of one person somewhere in Canada. We crossed the boundary at night, and many months later we got a bill for it, for customs, which we hadn't even thought about. Anyway, this puppy in this one folks' place... These were usually folks who worked with or for an airport or whatever, and they took us in, very nice people, and they had an extra bed upstairs in this house that had a linoleum floor. And I remember Tiger was the dog's name, and I remember picking her up, and she had had some water, and I could hear it sloshing around her belly. And the next morning, we had a big puddle, and I just felt horrible. But that lady was so sweet. Anyway, the puppy was no problem. As a matter of fact, she learned rapidly that as soon as we got someplace, he put his coat down, she got on it. So she was never any trouble for except that. And then we got into Anchorage, and this young couple had driven a Jeep up with some of our stuff. And they had rented a house, one floor of the house. I think there was another floor, but I never saw anybody. And it was on 9th and G. And we were there probably less than a week. They had a dog, too, so there were two dogs. And Dick wanted to come up to Fairbanks to visit with the guy that owned Polar Electronics, where he had established a relationship when he was on the base. And so we all piled into the CB, because nobody had jobs yet, you know, we're just there. Piled into the CB one lovely day out of Anchorage, flew to Fairbanks and found the shirtlifts, their name was Shurtleff, Chuck Shurtleff was his name, and went to their house, and we were going to go home the same day because we'd left the dogs in the apartment. And guess what? We're in Fairbanks, you can't fly out because of weather. So I'm not sure how many nights we spent there, but I think it was only one, because maybe she had a job. I don't know. Anyway, we put them on the train. They went home. I never got any repercussions about the dog, and I don't remember how we got her back, but we did. And while we're here with the airplane, Chuck took Dick up to the Geophysical Institute at the university and was interviewed by Hildred Haight, who hired him to work in the electronics shop. So guess what? We didn't have any money. Chuck took us to Stroker at the bank, and I don't know whether he signed a note or what, but we got $500 loan, and we bought a little 1946 civilian Jeep, a vacuum cleaner, and 1 month's rent. And so that's how we started out. We rented a little basement apartment on Hayes Street in College, which was behind Lindy's Grocery at the time. And we stayed there until we had, one of our goals was to homestead 160 acres, because you could. And so the winter that we were in College was when we trekked around and looked around, and we weren't going to go any farther from the university that he couldn't drive to work and back. So I think we gave ourselves 20 miles or something. I don't know what it was. And I don't remember how we found this property, except we used what they called the old wood road, which was the road that Fairbanksons went out of town to get wood. And apparently, I don't know whether it went to Nenana or not, but we used it for our driveway because it had been superseded by what's now the Parks Highway, which wasn't paved. And staked out 160 acres on the top of the hill because he wanted to build a landing field. He's going to put an airplane up there. Okay, that's okay. I don't care. So that's how that happened. And then, hang on. Then we had the problem of how do we get out there? Well, during all this time, we had joined the Ham Club in Fairbanks and were acquainted with quite a number of people, some from Eielson, some from Fort Wainwright, all over. And how this happened, I don't know, but we had an acquaintance. His name was Pete Brown, and he lived in North Pole, and we got chummy with them. And Pete knew somebody, and he was a scrounger like my husband, knew somebody that had two old trailers they wanted to get rid of. So guess who got them? And got them hauled out there, and there was a Wanigan on one. The side had been cut out, this Wanigan was on it. And then there was one longer than the other, and the short one went on the south side, and the longer one was on the east side, and the Wanigan was on the west side, and that's what we used for a bedroom. And then there was plumbing in this trailer. There was none in the other one. And for the life of me, I cannot remember how we had set up a chemical potty, because we had no water, we had nothing. But there was a stool in there, because eventually he dug a dry well and we were able to pour water down it. But anyway, that's what we did. And he put a roof over this whole thing. So, and it was a pitched roof with this aluminum stuff that's got ridges in it. And of course, that gave us an attic. He put a sort of a floor up there. We could stuff up there. And we just loved it when in the spring and the snow came off the roof. It always sounded like the Johnny G the Jolly Green Giant zipped up his pants. That was our joke. And it worked well for us. We were out there from 1960 until 66. We lived in that. But in the meantime, we're building a three-sided log house on the top of the hill, oriented north and south. And, you know, it just went on from there. We hired a guy that was just an absolute art with a backhoe. We loved watching him, and he laughed all the time. And he had a family here. I can't think of his name at the moment, but Marvin somebody. Anyway, and we had a basement dug that was probably about 20 by 15 or so we could put a furnace down there and hopefully a water storage tank, which we managed to buy from somebody else who had used it for a number of years, but discovered they had water. So anyway, this was a connection with the university and anything else that we needed. So we put some shelves down there and used it. So that's where we didn't move into that house until 66, and we didn't even have a door on the north side, but we got it up in time. And no power, no water. And when we were living down in those old trailers, we had three jerry cans that he filled with university water once a week. That's all we had. That's what we used. And I think we did the same thing up in the other house. And it wasn't finished. It was just a big empty place. The roof was held up by trusses, so there was no load-bearing walls, so we just had the whole thing to ourselves. And eventually that all got done. We made a huge mistake when the partitions were put up. We put aluminum-backed foil in all the partition walls, and that blocked any energy that we wanted, like radio signal and anything else, couldn't get through. So we learned that lesson, but we never built another house. But anyway, we peeled the logs, bought them from Curtis Lumber Company at the time, and I keep jumping back and forth because things come to mind. I haven't talked about this. I never have. So I think we had an outhouse. Yeah, we had an outhouse for a while, and then we got the chemical putty. That was an abomination, but it worked. And so anyway, we lived in that house together until 2005. Yeah, 2005.
You moved directly from that house to Raven Landing. Is that right? You were still in
the house? Yes, I was.
Yes.
I'd lived there all that time. Okay. Plus, I had been given no money at all, except half of his retirement and a little dab of Social Security, because I never worked at a real full-time job long.
This was the divorce.
Yes. And so I'm still getting half of his retirement. I'm sure he probably hopes I'll die, but I'm not going to.
Tell us about your work here in Fairbanks.
Oh, well, in the beginning, of course, he's an electronics guy. I mean, he just thoroughly electronics. And we got into the ham club, and there were ambitious people in there wanting to do all sorts of things. So I found myself sitting at desks in places that we wanted to start a school to teach electronics, and all kinds of pie-in-the-sky things were going on at that time. And that's pretty much what I did until way later on. I have a dear friend, Fran Chauvin, said they needed somebody at the blood bank at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. And she wanted me to see if I could get a job. And I did, and I did. I think it was $500 a month. No, that's what he was making. I don't know what I made. Anyway, so I stayed on there, always working part-time. And actually, I'm real proud of that job that we did there because there were three of us and we're still friends that kept the thing going. And I never forget one time somebody applied for a job to be a phlebotomist, and our supervisor, Roman Gray, told him, "You better watch it back there. They watch their, they watch their turf." What's more, through where we worked was a place for him to get to wherever he wanted to go. He never paid any attention to us. And finally, we figured out, well, I guess he figured we're doing what we're due. And we did. And we were very, very loyal to that thing. We all loved it. And we're still a team. We just are. And I wouldn't give it up for anything. But
there were three of you?
Four. Debbie, in and out.
And then their names?
Debbie McCurdy, Nita Livingston, Emily Wenin, and me. Yeah. I thought of something else. Now it's gone. Anyway. Well, I could go on and on, but I won't. We all quit about the same time because the hospital was expanding and they wanted to get rid of the processing of blood. We had always sent it to Anchorage, I believe, and Blood Bank of Alaska took it over, and we're not in the building any longer. So that all turned out well, I think. Nila is still here, Emily's here, Debbie's here, and I had lunch with two of them the other day, which was really, really nice. So my experience in Alaska has been absolutely positive. This town was a frontier town when I got here, sort of, not really. We didn't have horses in the streets or guns on people's hips, but it was not what it is now. And I've watched it, and I've always felt like it was so well cared for by people who really cared. And sometimes I feel like when I talk about this sort of thing, people think, well, we're just perfect. We are not perfect. We're the end of the road. We have everything here that everybody else has, but we deal with it, and I think we're all solvent and having a hard time because of oil prices, but I wouldn't leave it for anything.
How did you happen to come to Raven Landing? Well, I asked you two questions. And how did you happen to come here and tell me about your experience here?
Well, Raven Landing happened. I knew about Raven Landing, and I had been kept apprised of what it was with what was in the paper and what my dear friend who had been involved with it knew about it, but it was beyond me. However, I had no money for maintenance of the house. I mean, it just was there, and I used it what I could use it, and things died. I mean, one of the first things to go was the dishwasher, and this is when I'm all alone. And the washer was first, then the dishwasher. Anyway, things went by the wayside, and it became unlivable, both for water and the whole nine yards. So I had some financial help from a friend, and I'm here, grateful to be here. I got myself what's called a life estate. I still have possession of that house out there, in spite of the fact that I sold it. And if I hadn't sold it and gotten a payment, I wouldn't be here. So they're paying on it. It was 40 acres that was left after we sold off parcels. So I had gone through an attorney and got all this figured out. And if I empty out the mess that I've got in the house and bring down what I want and get rid of what I don't want, then I can turn it over to the folks that bought the property, and they'll pay me off, which isn't a whole lot, but I think it'll keep me I'm not sure of that. I don't regret any of it. Let me tell you, I just am so grateful for what I have been privy to. I don't know what else to say.
The last question on here that they stuck on is what was your favorite age and why?
I can't answer that, really. I just can't answer it. Every single decade of my life brought me something different, and I liked it all. I had such a good time. My horse riding friend still lives in Salem, Oregon. We correspond, not really correspond, but exchange cards. No, life's been good to me, and I'm very grateful.
Wonderful, positive answer. Thank you, June.
You're so welcome.
Have we missed anything?
Of course.
Yeah. Thank you very much.